Along with the horses, they had accumulated a small arsenal by now. Taking all of it with them, along with the small amount of supplies they found in the camp, Bo and Scratch rode out late that afternoon. By the time dusky shadows began to gather in the mountains, Bo and Scratch had reached a point where they could look down into the canyon. From here, they could see what was left of the burned buildings, as well as the long adobe barracks where the workers, brought at gunpoint from the village, were forced to stay. Bo spotted a man with a rifle lounging on a stool beside the heavy door. Even at this distance, Bo could see that a thick bar rested in brackets across the door to keep it from opening outward. That seemed to confirm his theory that Davidson had shut down the mine for the time being and locked up his workers so that they couldn't cause trouble. Bo pointed out the guard to Scratch, who nodded.
Bad news.
Scratch pointed the other way. Bo squinted and felt his heart sink as he saw the gardener gun still sitting on its tripod in the back of the same wagon where it had been the day before. The fire hadn't destroyed it after all. That eliminated the possibility of freeing the workers and letting them revolt against Davidson's iron-fisted rule. Even an angry mob wouldn't be any match for that machine gun. Lancaster could just mow them down.
We'll have to come up with some other plan.
Somebody's riding out.
Scratch studied the man on horseback, who started toward the mouth of the canyon and the valley beyond.
Danged if I don't think that's that young fella Alfred.
If anybody can tell us what's going on in the canyon, it's him. Let's go.
We gonna grab him?
That's right. Davidson's got Teresa and Evangelina and Luz. Maybe we need a hostage of our own.
Well, there's only one thing wrong with that plan, amigo. Davidson ain't gonna give a damn what happens to Alfred. You threaten to kill the boy, which I know you won't to start with. Davidson would just tell you to go ahead and do it.
You're probably right. But at least he can give us some information if we can get him to talk.
Trailing the extra mounts behind them, Bo and Scratch rode down out of the mountains and into the valley, then cut toward San Ramon. If Alfred's destination had been the village, and there was really nowhere else in the valley for him to go, he was probably there by now. But Bo figured they could grab him on his way back to the canyon. As they approached the village, shots rang out in San Ramon, causing the Texans to rein in sharply.
What the hell? Who's shooting? It's not Alfred. I'll bet a hat on that.
No, he's no gunman.
Reckon we better try to slip into the village and see what's going on?
I don't know. What else we can't? Hold a minute. I hear a horse. Just one man. Let's grab him.
They moved the horses into the shadows under some trees that grew along the creek meandering through the valley. The trail from San Ramon to Cutthroat Canyon ran along here, so Bo and Scratch weren't surprised a minute later when the hurrying rider came into view. The slice of moon and the stars floating in the sky overhead provided enough light for them to recognize him.
It's Alfred.
And he's riding like all the devil dogs of Hades are after him.
Bo and Scratch waited until he was almost even with their hiding place, then jabbed their heels into their horses' flanks and made the animals lunge out into the trail.
Oh my God! Oh, oh!
Alfred hauled hard on the reins and tried to swerve around the Texans, but instead his horse reared up, pawing at the air with its forehooves. Arms flailing, he tumbled backward out of the saddle and fell heavily to the ground. Scratch grabbed the reins of the now riderless horse while Bo dismounted and hurried over to Alfred.
Don't kill me! Please don't kill me!
Take it easy, Alfred. No one's gonna hurt you.
Mr. Creel?
That's right. Let me help you up.
What in the blazes is going on around here? What was that shooting in the village?
Cordoba.
Who?
You don't mean Bartolomeo Cordoba, do you?
Yes.
He's talking about the bandit Cordoba?
Well, he calls himself a revolutionary, but everybody knows he's just an outlaw. From what I hear, he has one of the most vicious gangs in all of Mexico.
I can vouch for that. I saw what they did to Clancy.
Now who's Clancy?
The men Mr. Davidson posted in the bell tower with a rifle.
So he was still up there?
That's right. He was. Until Cordoba and his men rode into San Ramon and brought him down. They were in the church before he knew what was going on. He never had a chance.
They killed him?
Yes. But not before sending word to Mr. Davidson about what they planned to do.
And that is?
Take over the mine.
Go on.
Like I said, Cordoba sent word to the mine. He wanted Mr. Davidson to send someone to the village to hear his terms.
Terms of surrender, you mean?
That's right. And I was the one Mr. Davidson picked for the job. I guess he figured I was the one he could most afford to lose if the bandits killed me. Mr. Davidson doesn't have many men left, you know.
Yeah, we figured that much. We done killed most of them.
What about Cordoba? What does he want Davidson to do?
He told me to tell Mr. Davidson that if he'll surrender and leave the canyon, he and his men will be allowed to ride away unharmed.
Oh, what a load of bull. Davidson and his bunch come out into the open, those banditos will shoot the hell out of them.
That's what I thought too. But Cordoba insisted that I carry the message to Mr. Davidson. I've never seen anyone so frightening in all my life. Cordoba's a huge man, with a bushy black beard and the eyes of a madman. The whole time I was talking to him, I was afraid that he'd pull a gun and kill me without any warning.
He might have if the mood struck him. He had a use for you, though, so he let you live. Did he say anything about that machine gun of Lancaster's?
The Gardner gun? He didn't mention it. Why?
Because he might not have heard about it. He might not have any idea that Davidson has a weapon like that.
What difference does it make? Cordoba has 50 or 60 men, all of them killers.
Fella could make short work of 60 men with that devil gun. Probably wouldn't take more than a minute or two.
The problem is whoever's manning the gun would have to stay alive to use it. Cordoba's men would be doing their best to pick him off.
Are you really trying to figure out a way to beat Cordoba? After all you've done to try to defeat Mr. Davidson, why don't you just ride away and let Cordoba wipe him out?
Because Cordoba wouldn't stop with Davidson. Innocent folks would die in the fighting too, and Cordoba won't treat the people of the valley any better than Davidson has. Plus, Davidson is holding some of our friends prisoner. We don't want to see them in the hands of a man like Cordoba, assuming they even lived through the ruckus.
After seeing what they did to Clancy, I can understand why you feel that way. I wouldn't want them to get Rosalinda in their power.
What did happen to this fella Clancy? That's the second time you mentioned it.
They shot him. But I guess Cordoba wanted to impress upon me how dangerous he is because he had Clancy tied to the well in the plaza. Like this, with his arms and legs spread out, you know? Then the men stood off at a distance and they just shot him to pieces, one little bit at a time, until he finally died. And Cordoba made me watch the whole thing.
It takes a plum hydrophobia skunk to do something like that.
I'd say you're right. What are you supposed to do now, Alfred?
I have to tell Mr. Davidson what Cordoba said. Cordoba is giving him until dawn to surrender.
What if Davidson leaves the canyon tonight?
He can't. Cordoba posted men at the mouth of the canyon to keep him bottled up inside. I had to pass under their guns when I rode out. It was terrifying. But I knew they had orders from Cordoba not to kill me. Yet.
Do you know how many there are?
Half a dozen or so. The rest are in San Ramon, celebrating the riches they're going to have. But if they hear any shooting from the canyon, they can get there in a hurry and finish off Mr. Davidson if he tries to escape.
Seems to me like the only chance is to hit Cordoba before he expects it.
That's right. We'll have to use the element of surprise. And that machine gun will be the biggest surprise of all.
I can't believe that after everything that's happened, you're going to fight on Mr. Davidson's side again?
You've heard of the lesser of two evils?
Yes.
Well, I'm not sure that there is such a thing here, but Cordoba is the more pressing threat. I want you to ride back into the canyon and tell Davidson that we're offering him a truce. We'll help him take care of Cordoba.
How in the world are you going to do that?
We're going to kill the men Cordoba posted at the mouth of the canyon. Once we've done that, Davidson and his men can attack Cordoba's forces in the village just before dawn. Lancaster will have that Gardner gun, and Scratch is going to be up in the bell tower with a Winchester, so he can pick off some of the banditos from there.
Oh, so all I have to do is sneak through a whole village of hombres who'd like nothing better than to kill me.
Yeah, that's about the size of it.
I like it.
That's not all, though. Even with the machine gun, Davidson's going to be outnumbered. I'm sure he has plenty of extra guns in there. You'll have to convince them to turn loose the men who've been working in the mine and arm them so that they can fight against Cordoba, too.
He'll never do that. He won't let the villagers go. He can't trust them after the way he's treated them.
He'll have to. And the men will have to realize that they have a bigger enemy now than Davidson. It'll be up to you and to Teresa and Rosalinda and Evangelina to convince them of that. If he can hit Cordoba with a force of 30 or 40 men, plus that machine gun, he's got a chance of winning.
If we win, what then?
We'll deal with that once the time comes. Maybe after we've been on the same side again, Scratch and I can get Davidson to listen to reason. First things first, tell us as best you can where Cordoba's men are hidden around the canyon mouth.
Alfred did so, and then reminded them.
I might not have seen all of them when I rode out. There could be more than I think.
We'll keep that in mind. Give us about 15 minutes to get in position. Then you ride through there just like you did before. They'll be expecting you.
All right. But I'm not sure how you can kill 6 men without raising an alarm and warning Cordoba that something is going on.
Well, you leave that to us, young fella. Bo and me was practically raised by Injuns. Skulking around comes natural to us.
Good. Because Cordoba told me that a lot of his men are half-breed Yaquis, and they love to torture their prisoners.
Bo and Scratch knew that they were lucky not to have run into some of Cordoba's men when they rode down into the valley earlier that evening. So they led the horses into the grove of trees on the creek bank instead. They would leave the animals there for the time being. After the threat of the guards at the canyon mouth had been taken care of, they could retrieve the horses. Bo had a good sense of time and had been keeping track of it in his head as he and Scratch approached Cutthroat Canyon on foot. He knew that Alfred would reach the canyon mouth soon. The Texans dropped to their hands and knees and began crawling toward the canyon so that their light-colored clothing wouldn't be as noticeable in the darkness. They stayed behind the sparse brush as much as possible.
Halt! Who is it?
It's just me, Alfred. I rode into San Ramon before, remember?
You bring Bartolomeo's message for your boss, no?
That's right.
We heard the shots. You got to see our men play their favorite game, gringo. Maybe before this is over, we play the game with you, eh?
Senor Cordoba promised that if we surrender, we would be allowed to leave peacefully.
Oh, sure. That's what I meant. Run on back to your boss, gringo.
Once Alfred was gone, the guards exchanged a few lewd comments among themselves about his manhood, then settled down to keep watch on the canyon mouth again. By this time, Bo and Scratch had a pretty good idea where all of them were. Using hand signals to communicate, the Texans decided that Bo would take the three men to the left of the canyon, while Scratch handled the trio of guards to the right. They had to do it without making any racket, too, because gunshots would bring Cordoba and the rest of the bandidos charging out from San Ramon. Bo took his time crawling toward the outermost guard on his side of the canyon. He planned to work his way in toward the opening, one guard at a time. When he was close enough to the first man to smell sweat and the greasy buckskins the man wore, he slipped his knife from behind his belt noiselessly. The guard shifted. Bo came up behind him, clamped his left hand over the man's mouth, and jerked his head back, and used his right hand to draw the blade quickly across the guard's throat. The guard died almost instantly. Carefully, Bo lowered the corpse to the ground and started toward the next man, moving as quietly as a cat or an Indian. Just as Bo came up behind him, the guard turned his head to spit chewing tobacco on the rocks at his feet. He must have seen a flicker of movement from the corner of his eye as Bo closed in on him, because he tried to twist around and bring up the rifle he held. Bo struck swiftly. The bandit's eyes were wide and staring into Bo's from a distance of less than a foot. It didn't take long for life to fade from those eyes. Again, Bo lowered the dead man to the ground without a sound. That left just one man on his side of the canyon mouth, and Bo hoped that Scratch was having equal success on the other side. Judging by the lack of an uproar, that was probably the case. Bo crept closer to the last man and was about to strike when the guard suddenly whirled around as if someone had shouted a warning in his ear. Bo saw the rifle barrel coming toward him and lunged at the guard. He didn't try to grab the weapon and force the barrel skyward or toward the ground. Instead, he slapped his left hand down on top of the breech so that when the guard jerked the trigger and the hammer fell, it caught the web of skin and flesh between his thumb and first finger instead of the firing pin striking the cartridge in the chamber. The rifle didn't go off. Bo crashed into the guard and knocked him over backward. Bo landed on top of him, drove the knife into his belly, and ripped the blade to the side as hard as he could. Bo rolled off the body. The rifle's hammer still pinched the skin of his other hand. He got hold of it and eared the hammer back, freeing his hand. It hurt like blazes where the hammer had dug into it. He shook the hand, trying to ease the pain.
Bo, you all right?
Yeah, no real harm done. What about your three?
Dead as they can be. I had a little trouble with the last one, but he didn't raise too much of a ruckus.
Same here. Did you see any more?
Nope. I'd say old Alfred was right about there only being six of them.
Then as long as nobody comes to relieve them before morning, we're all right.
As long as Davidson goes along with the plan.
I don't reckon he's got much choice about that. Not if he wants even a chance to live.
To the Texans' surprise, about a half an hour later, a soft call sounded from just inside the canyon mouth as they sat there waiting.
Krita! Morton! Are you out there?
Davidson, is that you?
Yeah. We need to parley. Are Cordova's men dead?
They are. Come on out here if you want to. Alone.
Davidson stepped out of the shadows into the fading moonlight, carrying a rifle.
You took a chance coming out here. Those bandits could have still been lurking.
Not that much of a chance.
We could have settled it right here now if we'd had to. I'll still do it. You don't know how much I want to kill you, Creel.
That's enough. I hate these two bastards as much as you do, Skinner. But it appears that we need them at the moment.
I'd say you need all the fighting men you can get.
If fighting men is one thing, traitorous murdering sons of bitches is another.
Oh, there's an old saying about the pot and the kettle.
Now take it easy, both of you. If we're going to deal with Cordova, we need to work out the plan we're going to use.
Didn't Alfred tell you what we had in mind?
He told me, but he's so scared I can't be sure he's got it all right. If we're going to be fighting side by side, I want to hear it from your own mouth, Creel.
Fair enough.
Quickly, Bo sketched in the same plan he had told Alfred to pass along to Davidson. Skinner objected when Bo came to the part about freeing and arming the men locked up in the barracks.
Boss, you can't turn those damn dirty greasers loose. They won't fight for you.
They won't be fighting for Davidson. They'll be fighting for themselves. They don't want to live under Cordoba's thumb. Let Teresa and Rosalinda and Evangelina talk to them. They'll make the rest of them see that they've got to go along.
I had things under control here except for those holdups until you and Morton came to Cutthroat Canyon. I didn't realize you'd ruin everything.
That's what happens to little tin-plated dictators. Sooner or later, justice comes calling.
Justice? There's no such thing. Only money and power. And death. Justice belongs to the man with the fastest gun.
We'll see about that one of these days. For now, let's concentrate on Cordova.
All right. We'll go along with what you say, Creel. We'll even turn those peasants loose. But remember, I've got Lancaster and his machine gun. If they don't follow orders, I might as well go ahead and slaughter all of them. They won't be doing me any good.
It won't come to that. We'll approach the town quietly on foot. Men will have to carry the machine gun because we can't use the wagon. The bandits are celebrating in the village, so most of them would be getting drunk and sleepy by now. Cordova plans to ride out to the canyon with his men at dawn to get your decision. If we hit them a half hour before dawn, they won't be expecting it. That gives us a couple hours to get ready. Gather your forces here at the canyon mouth. I'll be waiting for you. By then, Scratch will be up in the bell tower at the church with a rifle.
Oh, I'm obliged for the vote of confidence, amigo. I hope I don't get killed on the way and let you down.
You won't.
Now, what about when it's over?
You mean if we win and we're still alive?
Exactly.
Then you take whatever gold you got on hand and go. A mine belongs to the people of the valley now.
What? Hell no!
Hold on. We ride out free and clear? You don't try to set the Mexican law on us?
That's right. You must have made quite a bit of money off that mine already. You'll come out all right, Davidson. You'll still be a rich man. More than that, you'll still be alive.
There's still a fortune in that canyon. I could be a lot richer man.
You could also be a lot deader man.
Well, that's true, all right. Okay, you got a deal. You keep those greases from mobbing us, and we'll ride away.
Boss, all that gold!
My mind is made up. Of course, we still have to live through the fight with Cordova.
Be here an hour before dawn. It'll take us at least 30 minutes to get everybody in position for the attack.
We'll be here.
Davidson lifted a hand in farewell and faded back into the shadows with Skinner.
That varmint ain't gonna keep the bargain he made. You know that, don't you, Bo?
I know it. Once we're finished with Cordova, we'll have another fight in our hands.
Yep, no rest for the wicked, huh?
Well... there hasn't been much in the 40 years since San Jacinto, has there?
Scratch headed off into the dark night a short time later, after the moon had set, leaving Bo to wait for Porter Davidson and the makeshift army the man was going to put together. He hoped that he was right, and that the three young women from the village would be able to persuade the men to fight on behalf of their former oppressor. Otherwise, even the machine gun might not be enough to tip the odds in their favor. The stars continued their stately, almost indiscernible progression across the heavens, and about an hour before dawn, as the faintest tinge of gray began to appear in the eastern sky, Beau heard movement in the canyon. He tightened his grip on the rifle he held, just in case Davidson planned to try some sort of double cross.
Creel!
Right here.
Davidson stepped out of the canyon. Jim Skinner, Douglas, and Lancaster followed him. Behind them came Wallace and the few remaining supervisors from the mine. Then, to Beau's surprise, he saw Alfred step out into the starlight. The young man clutched a rifle and looked very uncomfortable about doing so. Rosalinda, Teresa, Evangelina, and Luce followed Alfred out of the canyon, and with them came 24 grim-faced men in peasant clothing, the workers from the mine. A few of them carried rifles, more had pistols, and a few were armed only with machetes or pickaxes. Evangelina spotted Beau and ran over to him. She threw her arms around him.
Señor Beau, Alfred told us you were alive, but I still feared it was not so.
Yeah, I'm fine, and so is Scratch. Shouldn't you ladies stay in the canyon until the fighting is over, though?
You can say that after everything you have seen? We have as big a stake in this fight as anyone, Señor Creel.
This is true. All I ask is the chance to get one of those bandits in my sights.
You'll have the chance. Where's the machine gun?
It's coming. Several of the lads are bringing it.
Sure enough, four of the men from the village came into sight a moment later. Two of them carried a crate each, probably full of ammunition, while the other two carried the gun itself, one at each end. The gardener was still mounted on its tripod.
You'll need to set up so that you can cover the plaza. Some of Cordoba's men will already be there, and when the others hear the shooting, that's probably where they'll head when they come out of the buildings. The rest of us will work our way through the village, cleaning out the bandits as we come to them. It's going to be bloody, dangerous work, and not all of us will survive. But if we can wipe out Cordoba and his men, the people of San Ramon can live in peace once again. Lancaster, you and the men with the machine gun go ahead. Be mighty careful about it, though. You can't afford to make any noise and warn Cordoba's men that something is about to happen.
Understood. We've fought together and we've battled against each other, Creel. I'm glad that for now we're on the same side again.
So am I.
Lancaster and the men with the machine gun set off toward the village. Beau made sure that the others all understood what they were to do, and then they started toward San Ramon, too. The little army moved quietly through the graying darkness. Beau glanced toward the spot where the bell tower was located, even though he couldn't see it. Scratch ought to be up there by now. Instead of dragging, time now seemed to race by. Almost before Beau knew it, they were right outside the village. He had never been a general or any other kind of officer, but he lined up his troops, splitting them so that they could attack on the flanks and the machine gun would cover the center. He moved along the ranks, pausing for an encouraging word here and there. He made sure that the women were in the rear, although Teresa argued with him about that. Evangelina and Rosalinda persuaded her to go along with Beau's wishes.
Don't worry, you'll get to fight. I'd bet a hat on that.
When he came to Skinner, the skull-faced gunman sneered.
When this is over, Creel, we'll settle things. Don't forget.
I'm not likely to.
Beau moved on and nodded to Douglas.
Even I'm alive in an hour, I'm riding away, Creel. Just thought you'd like to know.
You're not working for Davidson anymore?
I had enough. I fought in range wars and railroad wars and just about every sort of war you can think of. But I don't like what he did to the people down here. I'm tired of it sticking in my craw.
Does Davidson know about that?
I don't work for the man anymore. It's none of his business. And for what it's worth, Lancaster said he's been thinking about it and feels the same way. He told me to tell you if I got a chance.
I'm obliged.
When Beau reached Alfred, he put a hand on the young man's shoulder and felt the trembling that went through Alfred's body.
You'll be fine. Just keep your eyes open and your wits about you.
I never fought in any battles before.
Maybe you'll be lucky and you'll never have to again.
Beau came to Porter Davidson, who gave him a curt nod.
A lot has happened since that first night in El Paso, hasn't it?
Seems like more than a couple weeks ago.
It certainly does. You've bested me, Creel. I'm not quite sure how you did it, but you have. I'll be leaving Cutthroat Canyon and this valley a beaten man. I hope you're happy.
I'll be happy when these folks are free again. That's all.
You'll understand if I don't wish you good luck.
I'd be shocked if you did.
Beau glanced at the sky, saw that it had lightened considerably more, and knew the time had come. He moved to the head of the left flank, raised his Winchester over his head so that everyone could see it, and then brought his arm forward in a sweeping signal to attack. The men on both flanks broke into a run. bare feet and feet shod in rope sandals or boots, pounded against the ground. Cordoba must have posted a few guards, but the men were sleepy or hungover or both, and obviously didn't notice what was happening until the attackers reached the edge of the village. Then, a man in a sombrero lurched up from where he had been slumped in a doorway and started to lift his rifle. On the dead run, Bo shot him in the chest. More of the bandits stumbled out of the buildings. Those who had been curled up in their blankets in the plaza leaped to their feet to see what the commotion was about. Rifles and pistols began to pop, and the machine gun suddenly opened up with a chattering roar. Streams of lead played back and forth across the plaza with lethal results. Bandits went down, shredded into gory ruin by the pounding bullets. Orange spurts of muzzle flame filled the pre-dawn murkiness. Bullets whined around Bo's head like angry, lethal insects. As one of the bandits rushed him, swinging a big knife, Bo rammed the barrel of the empty rifle into the man's belly. When the bandit doubled over in pain, Bo brought the Winchester stock down on his head. Pain lanced into his left calf. He stumbled, and that leg went out from under him. Bo knew he'd been hit, but he couldn't tell how bad it was. He thought the wound was just a crease, but he couldn't be sure about that and didn't have time to check because a wild-eyed bandit loomed over him, swinging the muzzle of a revolver toward him. As Bo looked up at his would-be killer, he saw the church's bell tower behind the man. Just as the gun came even with Bo's head, something flashed in the tower. The dead man collapsed, landing next to Bo. Bo tossed the empty rifle aside, grabbed the gun out of the dead bandit's hand, and struggled to his feet. He drew the Colt on his hip, and with an iron in each hand, he limped forward, firing to the left and right at the bandidos who were running around in a near panic. Off to his side, Bo saw Alfred swinging an empty rifle like a club, smashing down the bandits who surrounded him like old Davy Crockett at the Alamo. Alfred stumbled and went down, though, as one of Cordoba's men sunk a knife into his body. The man yanked the blade free and was about to stab Alfred again when Bo put a .45 round through his brain. With a flash of skirts, Rosalinda came out of the clouds of powder smoke and dust that had begun to roll over the village. She had a six-gun in her hand, and taking the other bandits by surprise, she blasted them away and then stood protectively over Alfred like a mountain lioness defending her fallen mate. The machine gun fell silent. Bo didn't know if it had jammed or was out of bullets or if Lancaster had been hit. When it resumed its stuttering thunder a moment later, he knew that the Englishman had just been reloaded. Bo wheeled around to see a tall, massively shouldered man with a bushy black beard laying waste to everyone around him with a pickaxe he must have picked up from where one of the wounded mine workers had dropped it. Based on Alfred's description, that was Bartolomeo Cordoba. He fired at the bandit leader, but the hammers of both guns clicked on empty chambers. The Colts were empty, and there was no time to reload because Cordoba had spotted him and now charged at him with surprising speed for a man of his bulk, swinging the pickaxe at Bo's head as he did so. Bo dropped under the deadly blow and rolled into Cordoba's legs. The enraged bandit fell over him and toppled to the ground. Bo tried to roll away, but a huge ham-like hand grabbed him and slung him back down. Cordoba's crushing weight landed on top of Bo, pinning him to the ground, and the bandit leader's thick fingers wrapped around his neck and began choking the life out of him. The empty revolvers had slipped out of Bo's hands, so he couldn't even use them as clubs. Bo began slapping desperately at the ground on both sides of him as his eyes began to bug out from their sockets due to the pressure Cordoba was putting on his throat. The fingers of Bo's right hand brushed against something metal. He closed his hand around it, pulled it toward him, shifted his grip so that he held the pickaxe shaft just below the head. Cordoba let go of Bo and lurched to his feet. The bandit staggered and then collapsed into a grisly heap. Bo rolled onto his side and pushed himself to his hands and knees, then to his feet. He realized that the machine gun was silent again, but this time, so were all the other guns. A breeze had sprung up with the dawn, and it eddied the clouds of smoke around the huts in the village. Bodies lay scattered everywhere. Most of them belonged to Cordoba's men, but Bo saw quite a few of the men from the village as well. He grimaced as he spotted Douglas lying on the ground, and he had a single bullet hole in the middle of his forehead.
Señor Bo!
Bo turned and saw Evangelina hurrying toward him, a pistol in her hand. Teresa was with her, and so was Luz. None of them seemed to be hurt, and he was relieved to see that.
Are you all right, Señor Bo?
Bo nodded wearily, then looked down at his left leg. The calf was bloody, but as he had thought, the bullet had just plowed a furrow across the outside of it.
I'll be limping for a while, but at my age, that's nothing unusual.
Still in one piece, I see.
The familiar voice brought a grin to Bo's face. Scratch came out of the smoke as well. Winchester canted over his shoulder.
You hit?
Nope. I don't think those varmints ever figured out I was up there. I downed damn near a dozen of them before the smoke got too thick for me to see anything. Figured I might as well climb down.
Teresa, Alfred's hurt over there. You might see if you can give your sister a hand with him.
Teresa hurried toward Rosalinda and Alfred, and Evangelina and Luce trailed along behind. The men from the village who had survived the battle began to gather in the plaza. There were no survivors among Cordoba's men.
You seen Davidson?
Not since the fighting started. I don't know if he made it or not.
They're all together now! Mow them down!
Bo and Scratch found themselves facing Davidson, Skinner, Wallace, and two more of Davidson's men. They stood next to the machine gun, behind which Lancaster still crouched, gripping the weapon's handles. Bo heard movement behind him and glanced back to see the four women coming forward to join the Texans, along with Alfred. Rosalinda was next to him, her arms around his waist to help him. All the women held guns. Behind them were the villagers, the ones who had been laboring in the mine, as well as the women and children and old men who had been trying to eke out a living from the farms that their menfolk could no longer work because Davidson had enslaved them.
You're outnumbered for a change, Davidson. You can still take that deal I offered you.
And leave all the gold that's still in the ground? The hell with that! It's all mine, Creel, and nobody's gonna take it away from me. Certainly not a couple of broken-down old men and a bunch of greasers. Alfred, get clear of them while you still got a chance.
No, sir. I quit. I should have quit a long time ago, when I saw what a monster you were turning into.
All right, then. Have it your own way, you damn fool. You can die along with that whore of yours.
She's not a whore. And nothing you did can turn her into one, you bastard.
That's enough! I told you to shoot him, Lancaster.
No, I don't think so. Creel, did the kid tell you what I said?
He did.
It still goes. My honor has been sullied enough. I'm done here.
You damn traitor. You took my money.
Yes, well, we all make mistakes from time to time, old boy.
Oh! Davidson jerked his gun up and fired at the Englishman. At the same time, Skinner's hand flashed toward his Colt.
Time to start the ball, Creel!
Everything else went away. Bo didn't see anything except Jim Skinner. His hand moved. He palmed out the Colt and killed Skinner, putting two bullets in his chest before the skull-faced gunman could even get off a shot. Skinner rocked back, his eyes filling with pain and surprise before they went glassy in death. Wallace and the other men began firing toward Bo, Scratch, and their allies. Shots slammed out from Scratch's rifle and the women's pistols as they returned the fire. Davidson's men tried to scatter, but slugs ripped into them, knocking them off their feet. Evangelina stalked forward, the gun in her hand erupting with flame and smoke as she emptied it into Wallace. He stumbled backward, his own gun sagging as the bullets poured into him. He collapsed, and Evangelina stood over him and planted her last bullet in the middle of his face. With her chest heaving, she slowly lowered the gun. That left Davidson as the only enemy still on his feet. He dropped his Colt and lunged toward the machine gun. Bo snapped a shot at Davidson, and Davidson staggered, but stayed on his feet. He reached the machine gun, lunged for the trigger. Bo and Scratch fired at the same instant and drove him backward off his feet. He lay there gasping as blood welled from the holes in his body. Bo and Scratch approached him cautiously. Davidson stared up at them, his mouth working.
You damn
You should have taken a deal.
Davidson's head fell to the side. He stopped moving. Scratch looked at Skinner, who lay a few yards away.
Well, that varmint was right about one thing anyway.
What's that?
Today, at least, justice belonged to the man with the fastest gun.
Later that day, Scratch was grinning across the table at Bo. The villagers had dragged out the table, along with others, into the plaza, where a fiesta of sorts was now going on. The celebration was tempered by the fact that earlier in the day, in the aftermath of the two battles, they had buried a number of friends and loved ones.
I don't reckon I ever saw you slap leather like that in all your born days.
Nothing focuses a fellow's attention quite so much as some hombre trying to kill him.
Yeah, well, wait till folks hear that you outdrew Jim Skinner.
Let's just keep that to ourselves. The last thing I need at my age is a rep as a fast gun.
Well, suit yourself. We live such a damn peaceful life anyway. I can see why you wouldn't want to mess it up.
Bo's wounded leg was stretched out and propped up on a stool. Bandages swathed his bullet-creased calf. Luce came out of a hut behind them and sat down at the table. She regarded the dancing and laughing and guitar playing going on in the plaza.
There will be many babies born in this village 9 months from now.
You reckon so?
Nothing flies in the face of death so much as life. And speaking of life, it appears that Alfred and the Englishman will pull through. They will need to be nursed back to health, though. Luckily for them, there will be no shortage of volunteers. Rosalinda will take care of Alfred, and Teresa seems taken with the Englishman.
I wish Pepe had pulled through, too.
Some things are not meant to be. I have a gold mine. Well, part of one, anyway. But I think I might trade it, if only I could...
Well, I reckon I'll ride out to the canyon tomorrow and see if I can find our horses or any of our gear. I'd sure like to get those Remingtons of mine back.
You can buy whatever you want. Everyone wants to give you and Bo shares in the gold mine, too.
We might take some of the profits to get ourselves outfitted again. But after that, I'd just soon see the money go to the folks here in the village.
Yeah, I done thought it over. Being a rich man is a blight and a curse. I don't think I ever knew a rich man who was plumb happy. Not that I've known all that many rich men, you understand.
Do what you wish about the gold. Right now, I think I will go out there in the plaza and dance like the others who are simply glad to be alive.
You know, I sort of feel the same way myself.
Luce linked her arm with Scratch's, and smiling, they went off to join the fiesta. Bo leaned back in his chair. The past couple of weeks had been pretty hellacious. But now, he and Scratch had the chance to rest up a mite before they drifted on again. He figured it would be a couple of more weeks before they started feeling too restless again. Someone sat down beside him. He looked over and saw Evangelina. She smiled at him, and once again he noticed that when she did that, the scars on her face didn't seem to matter near as much. Bo nodded toward the fiesta going on in the plaza.
Don't you feel like celebrating? I don't reckon you'd have much trouble finding some young fella to dance with you.
I am where I want to be.
Evangelina reached over and took hold of Bo's hand. He started to pull away from her, but for some reason, he didn't.
Dadgummit, Evangelina. I'm old enough to be your grandfather.
Perhaps, but you are not my grandfather.
Well, no. I reckon I'm not. But if you think you got to associate with some leathery old coot like me out of gratitude or because of what happened to you...
As I told you, I am where I want to be. Exactly where I want to be. What about you, Bo?
I don't reckon I can dance with a shot-up leg of mine.
Then we shall have to find some other way to celebrate the return of freedom to my people.
Oh, Lordy. Scratch ain't never gonna let me hear the end of this. But I reckon we can do that.
Sidewinder's Cutthroat Canyon is a Graphic Audio production. Copyright 2009, William W. Johnstone. Published by arrangement with Kensington Publishing Corporation. All rights reserved. Production copyright 2009, The Cutting Corporation. All rights reserved. Performed by Ken Jackson, Mort Shelby, Tim Carlin, Johann Detweiler, James Lewis, David Coyne, Terence Acel Ford, Amanda Thickpenny, Dylan Lynch, Tim Getman, Richard Rowan, Joe Brack, Nanette Savard, Andy Clements, Kate Foster, and Colleen Delaney. Directed by Ken Jackson. Book adapted for graphic audio by Doug Krenzlin. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Greg Reinfeld. Original music by Johann Detweiler. Title theme by Brian Patton. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornett. If you enjoyed Sidewinders, be sure to look for the series Smoke Jensen the Mountain Man, as well as The Last Gunfighter, available at Road Stops Everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net, where you'll find samples of all our Action Pump titles, as well as free downloadable extras, forums, and podcasts. Read the Pinnacle Edition. Visit www.kensingtonbooks.com. Keep listening for previews of other thrillers in graphic audio.
Smoke Jensen is a man with blood on his hands.
Do you have any idea of the numbers of graves I've got on my back trail? Enough to populate a fair-sized town, and then some.
He finds himself coming to a crossroads. The price he must pay for all that killing is something that Smoke will no longer bear.
I'm tired of all the blood. I'm tired of all the killing. I'm tired of the looks people give me. I'm tired of being the most notorious gun in all the so-called Wild West. I hope I never have to pull a gun in anger again.
But that was before Smoke ever knew the name of Frederick Von Hausen.
Jensen! Smoke Jensen! Your time has come to die! Not by a faster gun, but by a man who is much more intelligent than you. You'll see, Jensen. You'll see.
When the pompous German aristocrat looking for the ultimate thrill kill comes beating down Smoke Jensen's door, Smoke will be pushed to the very limits of his endurance.
No man will talk down to me and expect to live. I'll stand and fight. And when I decide to do that, I won't be taking any prisoners for trial.
When there are no other options, sometimes violence is the only way.
You're all gonna die.
Don't miss a second of the brutally violent action in Smoke Jensen number 9, Pursuit of the Mountain Man. Rivers of blood will flow.
This just in. A large fire is burning on the grounds of Arkham Asylum.
Allow me to introduce myself. I am called Enfer.
Reports are spreading through the city that various inmates have been spotted in nearby neighborhoods.
Honey, I'm home!
I came to make sure you answer for those firefighters.
Justice, Batman, is not the same thing to all people.
Graphic Audio presents DC Comics Batman Inferno.
Oh my, this will be good.
Batman just ran over that girl!
Three Gotham City police officers are confirmed dead. A full-scale manhunt is underway to find Batman and bring him in.
Lay him down, slow, and step away. Do it, Batman!
I'm not going to freeze while Gotham burns.
Arch-arsonist Enfer is apparently making good on his threat to spread havoc across Gotham City.
My city, my love. Who could live anywhere else?
Batman and all related names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2009, DC Comics.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220 or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets that include 5 books of a series, available only at www.graphicaudio.net.